Live from the Pepperdine Studios in Malibu, California, this is Political Vendetta with your host, Vijay Vaswani.
Hello, and welcome to the premiering episode of Political Vendetta. My name is Vijay Vaswani, and today is our very special episode. Politics is not a game played by parties of both sides, flipping back and forth to promote their interest and to keep their power, but rather, it is an essential part of our lives, where the issues in policy are and must be the focal point. Vengeance, as it must entail, is never the answer. But rather, education can be the solution to the problems that exist. We, the American people, are in charge. And as hard as the resounding media try to entertain us with domineering views of each side, trying to sway us one way or another, we must keep our focus on our values and ideals and discuss how, in such diversity, we can find unity. This season, our show will bring you scholars from various backgrounds and from a wide range of ideologies. The hope is to initiate a conversation on major issues that affect our state, nation, and our personal well-being. Obviously, we have those on the extremes that eat up all the attention, but we are a nation of many colorful beliefs, and so... May the perspectives come from a liberal left or a conservative right, our goal is to underline the issue and try to further understand both sides in hopes to educate and grow. Today's topic mention. As per the recent shootings in Washington Navy Guard and Sandy Elementary School, today's key issue is gun control and our Second Amendment. But before we begin on the issue, I'd like to introduce our very special guest. Today, our guest is Chris Jonigan. Chris is a second-year student at public policy at Pepperdine University. He first attended UC Santa Cruz for undergraduate, but then transferred and graduated from Washington University in San Luis. He was born and raised in Oakland, California. And seeing how the city is consistently ranked among the top 10 most dangerous cities in the U.S., his passion was fueled. He's also a United States Army National Guard in 2010, but due to medical complications, he was discharged. His rank is Specialist E4. Moreover, it is his military experience that began his interest in firearms policy of the United States and other countries. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Chris, tell us about yourself and your background relating to the issue.
Well, as you just said, I enlisted in the Army National Guard in late 2009, and then I served most of 2010 before I was medically discharged. My rank was Specialist E4, same thing. I never went to war or anything, but I did have a... march around like any good soldier would with an M4 rifle, and I did know several people close to me who actually become victims of gun violence. Some were even shot and killed on the streets of Oakland. Mm-hmm. So that was what got me interested in the problem of gun violence, and particularly in the inner city communities in the USA, and how we can fix that problem. Not just the inner city, but also just this whole country over, because this country obviously has a much higher rate of gun violence and violent crime than a lot of other industrialized countries in the world. So,
how did you enter the military, the Army?
I come from a military background. My grandfather It was, he served for 21 years. He was a Korean War veteran. He enlisted right after World War II was over, and he very nearly ended up serving in the Vietnam War as well, but then he retired from the Army. And I have a cousin who is a very high-ranking officer in the Air Force Reserves. She has served for over 20 years as well. So it wasn't just my experience, but it was the experience of relatives that got me interested in such these related topics that we're talking about today.
Okay. Well, the topic is gun control today. As you know, we've had shootings in our recent history. We've had so many shootings over the past couple of years.
Yes, we have.
I mean, why? Where do you stand on the issue, first of all, in short, and what made you to that?
I am an advocate of reasonable, sensible gun safety measures, so I guess you could say I'm pro-gun control. But that people shouldn't take that as meaning that somehow I'm some crazy far-left person that wants to repeal the Second Amendment or confiscate all the guns from law-abiding citizens. If somebody wants to have a handgun under their pillow or in their closet to defend themselves against a possible burglar or armed robber, or if somebody wants a shotgun or a rifle to hunt, I'm all for that. That's fine. But, I mean, being in the military, I have seen firsthand what types of weaponry can do to people. I mean, it's not... People tend to think that it's some sort of, I don't know, action movie like Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger or Chuck Norris, and that... That violence is very stylized. It's for entertainment purposes, and it's very ugly. It's very terrible stuff to see in real life, people getting shot dead and what happens to people when they do get hit by bullets. So I just think there is no reason why a civilian should be able to go running around on the street with military grade weaponry. There should
So I see you're doing your studies, your graduate studies at Pepperdine University School of Public Policy. What are your ambitions going forward?
My ambitions going forward, I haven't completely settled on a career yet. In the past, not only was I in the military for a short time, but I also did 2 years of substitute teaching in a underperforming school district. I mostly substitute taught at junior high, very long term. So I could see myself being a teacher at the community college level, or we have had at the School of Public Policy at Pepperdine, we have a lot of government agencies such as the State Department or the FBI recruiting from our program. So those are possibilities too, and I'm just like very open-minded going forward.
Okay. So I guess let's start on the issue of gun control. But before we begin, let's look at the law of the land, the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether you agree or disagree with its direction pertaining to the law, the bottom line is that it is a standard in which we have gone by and still very much go by.
Right.
Somehow we feel that with the times we live in and situations we've encountered, these laws must be altered to the modern world. Others feel that the Constitution is broad enough. You have a big base, the NRA, to encompass such of these upheavals. But, you know, one must remember, no matter the view, we must act one way or another to prevent such tragedies such as Virginia Tech, Aurora, Colorado, Virginia Navy Yard, which killed 12 people, and Sandy Elementary School, which killed 20 kids and 6 adults, from occurring again. But we must look at the law of the land. That's how things begin.
Right.
Our Second Amendment states, embedded within the U.S. Constitution, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, to some, they're like, what does that mean? You know, it's too complicated. In layman's terms, the Second Amendment identifies the need for a militia or army to protect the country. This amendment grants the right of people to possess and own guns, and further explains that this right should not be taken away from citizens by the federal government. Mm. The current debate on gun control is based on two interpretations of this amendment. Whether it is intended to grant the federal government with ability to protect citizens by organizing a militia, or if it gives individual citizens the right to purchase, own, and possess firearms in residential areas. Issues related to gun control are simple. If individuals should be banned from possessing assault weapons, whether stricter background checks are needed, if people should be permitted to carry guns in public. Citizens are concerned on the incidents of mass murder in recent history. Now, you can say a rule is a rule because society made it a rule. But the question here is, should it be a rule? Should we alter our laws, our constitution, to avoid such catastrophe of guns? Or is it not a gun problem, but rather a people problem? Chris, what do you think? Is it a people problem or is it a gun problem?
Well, I'm aware of all the arguments against gun control that, you know, first of all, guns don't kill people, people kill people, or that it's not a gun problem, it's a mental health problem. And I've considered them carefully. But, well, if you want to start off with the Second Amendment was originally ratified to make it easier to raise a militia in case that the British invaded again. This was 1791, I believe, when the Second Amendment was ratified, and the British did invade again, the War of 1812. But obviously, in the year that we're in now, this is 2013, over 200 years later, I don't think the United States has the most powerful military in the world. So obviously,
yeah,
the original reason why we ratified the Second Amendment is no longer valid. I don't think we're going to have to worry about a British invasion, at least an armed one, anytime soon. British invasion, talking about, would be One Direction, not the British Army invading the USA. I mean, you just have to look at, like, country after country after country, industrialized nations I'm talking about here. From South Korea to Japan, our neighbor to the North, Canada, all of the Western European countries and the Scandinavian countries, the UK, Ireland, Singapore, all these countries have very strict regulations and laws compared to the USA about who is allowed to own and possess a firearm, and so, they are all far, far safer than we are. So
I'm trying to understand. So what do you have a problem with in the Second Amendment, or do you have a problem at all?
I mean, what I'm saying is, as soon as I say the term gun control, a lot of people are going to say, oh, he wants to confiscate people's guns, or he wants to repeal the Second Amendment. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is basically by gun control, I mean three things. Number one, keep the guns away from people with a felony conviction or domestic violence conviction. Number two, keep the guns away from severely mentally ill people. And number three, keep them away from juveniles. And it's completely possible to do all of that while preserving the Second Amendment and letting law-abiding citizens keep their guns.
Okay. So, you know, guns have been in our history for more than 100 years. We didn't have problems that we have today.
Right.
Then. Maybe the problem is not guns, but our moral values, our culture, violent games, music, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think this is a bigger part of our society? Then we didn't have so many casualties. We didn't have the mass murders we have today.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it is not guns, even at a far distance at all.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a culture we live in?
Well, I've heard that argument before, yes. And just for the record, I spent 2.5 months this summer from middle of June to the end of August in the UK. And I also visited Ireland. And I saw that they play very much the same kind of video games, whether it's Call of Duty or Medal of Honor or Halo, that they play. They play the same games in those countries that they do in the USA. Some of the TV and the movies over there are even more violent, like stuff that wouldn't even make it past the censors here in the USA made it, you could see on TV and in the movies over there. And yet, I think in Great Britain, there's usually about 100 gun deaths a year. That's total. We're talking a country of 60 million people. The UK is 100 gun deaths total. Whether that's including homicide, accidental deaths, justifiable shootings, whereas in the United States there's over 11,000. So I mean, the whole violent movies, violent video games argument just doesn't check out at all.
So what do you think is changing over our society? Because we've had guns for so long now,
mm-hmm.
and you see not much changed. Just
right.
We have a bigger population. What do you think has changed? I feel like our culture has changed, and that goes back to people, not the weapon itself.
I mean, And like when the Second Amendment was ratified in 1791, there was only one type of gun around. Those guns were muskets. Muskets only needed, they needed to be reloaded after each shot, so they could only fire one, one bullet at a time. Now in this day and age, you have guns like the Bushmaster 223, which is basically the civilian version of the M16 that the military uses. And for example, in the Sandy Hook shooting, Adam Lanza had a Bushmaster 223 with 30-round magazines, so he could fire 30 bullets without having to reload. I mean, if they had, I mean, even if he had a clip in the gun that only allowed him to fire 5 to 10 bullets rather than 30 bullets without having to reload, every time he has to reload or stop shooting, that gives somebody time to escape or run away. And it was when he was when he had to stop shooting that kids and the teachers were able to run away. But I mean, for a civilian to have that kind of firepower, I just think it's unnecessary.
Okay. I mean, looking at both sides of the aisle, one side feels that it is the right of the people to protect themselves from harm.
Right.
Those who have guns have power. And while the other side feel that guns would only increase violence, I don't know. Those who have guns have power, and for those who do not, don't. Although there are good people in this world, and there are also evil people, but whether or not gun laws exist, evil people are going to do whatever it takes to accomplish their goal. Don't you think our focus must be to stop these people, but also provide protection to those who are innocent and feel that they need it for their own protection? I mean, isn't it basically taking away your liberties?
That depends on what you define as liberty. I mean, that a lot of children who go to school in certain areas, especially in the inner city and in the USA, do not feel safe when they're walking to or from school, or even when they're in school, because they have to be worried about gun violence. I don't think you could really call those children free if they have to constantly live under the threat of gun violence, especially in a city like, for example, Chicago, which has over 500 gun homicides every year. It seems like you're bringing up the argument that criminals won't follow the law, and therefore gun control won't help, that criminals will just get the guns no matter what. Once again, I say there are countless countries that, for the most part, a lot of people think that it would be easy for a criminal to buy a gun off the black market on the street, but I would beg to differ because I'm from Oakland, a city that's long had a reputation as being a very dangerous city, and you can look at basically buying a gun off the black market the same as you could drug dealing. I mean, if you get caught trying to buy a gun illegally, you go to prison. And I mean, if you know anything about buying illegal drugs, if the drug deal goes bad, then those guys will rob you. Those guys will even kill you. And it's the same thing the same dynamic involved with trying to buy a gun off the street from an arms trafficker. I mean, the guys who were the mass shooters we're talking about, the Cho Sung Hui, the mass shooter at Virginia Tech, Adam Lanza at Sandy Hook, James Holmes at Aurora, Colorado, or I forget his name down in Tucson, the guy that shot the congresswoman. Those guys were obviously severely mentally disturbed. They were very psychotic loners. There is no way that any of those guys could have gained the trust of a real-life, legit arms trafficker to get a gun illegally. I mean, for the most part, a gun has to be bought legally, and then it gets stolen, and then sold illegally, or it's just a straw purchaser.
Do you have statistics to back that up, or where have you read that?
I haven't read it. I mean, I'm just going off of what I know from the people that I know back home who were actually involved in this kind of illegal activity, or the problem of the straw purchaser. If a person... is for whatever reason, criminal record or mental illness, can't get a gun legally, then they just get somebody who can buy the gun legally to buy it for them. So,
well, I mean, I don't have a personal opinion here. I'm just trying to, play the devil's advocate.
Right.
And, bring up a certain argument that I feel that has not been, portrayed very much in the media. But there was a quote by Justice of the Supreme Court, Joseph Story. He said, "One of the ordinary modes by which tyrants accomplish their purposes without resistance is by disarming the people and making it an offense to keep arms." Another quote by Claire Wolfe, "When only cops have guns, it's called a police state."
Right.
So, I mean, what do you see here? I do feel that, you know, we should trust our police, but police sometimes are too overwhelmed to protect all their citizens from violent crimes.
Right.
I feel you must trust your people.
Right.
Give them the liberties that they deserve so they can defend themselves if they feel so inclined. Obviously, maybe stricter background checks or whatnot, but I feel that the ordinary person, if vetted, should be able to carry guns. What is your argument to these quotations? And
well, I think that's the problem right there, is that the system in this country is such that it's way too easy for a person to slip through the cracks, so to speak. I mean, it would be very easy for them to, even if they were to buy, if they were to go to a gun shop or like to go to a store and try to buy the guns, then they would be subject to a waiting period or a background.
So basically, I'm asking, what in the Second Amendment do you disagree with, or what in gun control are you so much for?
I would say I support a lot more strict than thorough background checks, and also some way to try to vet the mental health of a person. Like if a person has a history of severe mental illness, such as like if they're a schizophrenic, or if they have a history of severe drug abuse or alcohol abuse and stuff like that, that's an unstable person. And obviously, we don't want unstable people to have weapons, to have guns. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Well, what about trigger laws? I know that only 9 states in America have trigger laws. Trigger locks are a safety precaution, and it makes it more difficult to disarm a gun. States with a law are, you know, California, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and some more. What do you think about trigger laws? I mean,
I would agree with trigger locks, because each year in this country there are almost 600 people on average in this country die just from the gun going off accidentally, and if you had a trigger lock, that would largely take care of that problem, or at least cut way down those incidents.
So your thing is that ordinary citizens should have guns, but criminals should not have guns.
I'd say the mentally ill, people with a long criminal history, and juveniles should not have guns, right?
Okay, and what is the biggest misconception, you think, those who are pro-gun control? Because gun control is so vague.
Right.
You know, controlling what aspect? Are you controlling the people? Are you controlling the background checks? Are you making them more tough? What is gun control? And why is it so... why is it looked at so badly?
I mean, people like... I don't know. I'm not sure exactly why people think that gun control means they're going to confiscate the guns from law-abiding citizens, or repeal the Second Amendment, or change the law, or the wording of the law. But gun control, as I said before, means 3 things. Number one, keep the guns out of the hands of the people that have a felony conviction or domestic violence conviction. Number 2, keep them out of the hands of the severely mentally disturbed. And number 3, keep them out of the hands of juveniles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you said you were National Guard.
Right.
What did that teach you, or what did you take away from that kind of shaped your opinion about guns?
I mean...
because, I mean, I would think one in the National Guard would be more inclined.
Right, right.
But...
well, definitely in the military, definitely learn how to have a lot of more respect for guns and, like, the power and what they can do. I mean, I was never deployed or anything like that. My service was too brief for that. But it's not like they just drop you into the middle of the combat zone or they send you downrange into Afghanistan or Iraq, and then you just, like, the first person that you see that looks suspicious just start blasting. It doesn't work like that at all. They have very strict regulations in the military for the type of weapon they're allowed to use on a person, whereas the first type of weapon they're allowed to use on a vehicle or against an aircraft and stuff like that. And just like all things, even when you're in the theater of war, you have to conduct yourself by a certain set of rules. It's not a free-for-all. So.
Okay. And one of the biggest associations associated with guns is obviously the NRA.
Right.
The National Rifle Association.
Right.
And they're over 150 years old.
Mm.
You know, the applications for a year, I think, is around $35 a year. They sponsor gun shows, competitions, conferences, and whatnot. They recently rose $200,000 from grants and contributions.
Yeah.
And they have over 120,000 volunteers.
Right.
And they claim to have 4.5 million members.
Mm.
Now, if any policy were to come into place, how would they deal with them?
Well, I think that's a big the NRA is a big reason why it's been so difficult to pass into law any type of even the slightest common sense gun safety measure in the USA, because the NRA is a very powerful lobbying organization. Maybe they're not as powerful as people think they are, but
in what ways are they powerful? I mean, they have a huge constituency, 4.5 million people. But I know that they spend around, according to The Hill, they spend about $800,000 in the first quarter of 2013. So they have
right.
big spending money. But besides money, what power do they have? Why are they such a big problem to those who want to have gun control?
Well, definitely the most visible member, I don't know about the most powerful member of the NRA, but the most visible one has been their CEO. His name is Wayne LaPierre. And after the Sandy Hook shooting, if people remember correctly, he went on TV and he basically argued that said the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And then I've heard, among other arguments that he has made, that said...
Do you disagree with that argument? It sounds valid.
I mean, it's possible, but people really need to realize just how rare it is. It's extremely rare that an armed civilian or just citizen has been able to stop a gunman and in their tracks. I mean, I can think of about one instance. Because if you recall the shooting that we had 2 weeks ago at the DC Navy Yard.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, the first audience. it was the guy that did the shooting was a Navy reservist. Well, a former Navy reservist. His name was Aaron Alexis, and. Because I don't know why they call this Navy Yard a gun-free zone, because it's not a gun-free zone at all. There are plenty of armed security along the perimeter or at the entrance of the Navy Yard, and there's a lot of MPs at the Navy Yard. And the first person he shot was actually not only a security guard, but an armed security guard. After he shot this guy, he took his gun, and he ended up using that gun in this shooting that he ended up killing 12 people. So that's definitely an example of the good guy with the gun did not stop the bad guy with the gun. In fact, the bad guy with the gun shot the good guy and took his gun and used it to do even more damage. So.
Yeah, but you can't really control criminals. Criminals are going to be criminals whether the good people have the guns or not.
Right.
And one side of the argument is, I'd rather have good people holding guns, more good people holding guns, than a single bad person holding a gun. No?
Well, I mean, after Sandy Hook shooting and after the Aurora, Colorado shooting, I remember people said that... If you had just given the people inside the theater guns, they would have been able to take that guy out. Or if a teacher had a gun, he would have been able to take that out at Lanza. But almost any sheriff or any police chief would tell you that the resulting crossfire, it's a very confusing situation, obviously, a mass shooting. And that could just end up getting more people killed rather than less, because, like, the guy was shooting in Aurora, Colorado, the guy was shooting into a dark theater where there was a lot of people running around not knowing what was going on. And the resulting crossfire, people could have ended up being killed by friendly fire, as we call it in the military. And just as many people, even more, could have been killed by friendly fire as fire from the gunmen.
Mm-hmm. What we're going to do is take a quick break, a five-minute break, and we'll come back talking about our state laws.
Right.
This is obviously a federal law, a Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But what does our California law say about this issue? So thank you, Chris. You are listening to KWVS, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
It's not your mom and dad's radio. Girl, I gotta go. I'm finished with the show.
We're back on KWVS. My name is Vijay Vaswani. This is Political Vendetta. We have our guest here. And we have our guest here, Chris Jonagan. He's a National Army National Guard. Chris, what were you saying before the break?
I was just about to talk about several arguments that were commonly used by gun rights advocates, most notably the NRA, to try to make their point that gun control doesn't work. And I was just going to talk about why some of those arguments don't really check out. And the first argument that I have heard being said around many circles was that Hitler expanded gun control in Nazi Germany, and that because Hitler had a policy of gun confiscation, then somehow the Holocaust could have been averted. And that argument is very misleading because there was a law passed that was called the 1938 German Weapons Act in Germany when Hitler was in charge. But that law, for the most part, actually loosened the gun restrictions. Did not tighten the gun restrictions. It made loyal members of the Nazi Party, which was most of, if not all of, the population of Germany back then, made it a lot easier for them to own guns. It didn't make it more difficult. The legal age at which you could purchase a gun was lowered from 20 to 18. The gun licenses were extended from 1 year to 3 years, and even if the Jews had, and it did, it is true that the 1938 German Weapons Act did prohibit Jews from owning guns in Germany. But even before World War II, the Jewish population of Germany was only at 2%. So, I mean, only 2% of the population armed with handguns and other small arms. Do you really think they could have fought off Hitler's Panzer divisions, his Luftwaffe? I doubt it very much.
But we're a different state now. We're right. A democracy, and things work very different in the modern world.
Right.
How can you apply something like that to something like this today, when we have so much diversity in our land and over 300 million people? We have laws that people follow. Mm-hmm. Aren't they like different tangents you were talking about?
I'm just talking about the fact that people try to use Hitler and Nazi Germany as an example of tightening the gun restrictions on guns when actually he loosened them. And as you know, it did not make that society any safer for the people that he was going after. That's all.
Okay. Getting back to our Second Amendment, what is your opinion on the individual right to bear arms? Do you believe there is an individual right to bear arms?
Even if it's not explicitly stated in the Second Amendment, because it was originally, as you already talked about, the Second Amendment was originally to make it easier to raise a militia, and the individual right to bear arms wasn't added until much later. I would say that there is an individual right to bear arms, but with those rights come, well, the rights aren't, no right comes without restrictions. For example, you could compare it to the First Amendment. The First Amendment says freedom of speech, but that doesn't mean that you can walk into a crowded movie theater and yell fire, because
Correct.
Then you're putting people in danger. I mean, just with any other right, the Second Amendment should come with responsibilities and reasonable restrictions. And I don't think it's at all unreasonable to say that the severely mentally disturbed criminals and juveniles should not have a gun.
You'd mentioned someone running in the crowd and yelling fire.
Yeah.
You know, there's a quote here by Peter Venatopoulos. He says, taking my gun away because I might shoot someone is like cutting my tongue out because I might yell fire in a crowded theater. What do you say to that?
Well, if you shoot somebody in self-defense, that's obviously a whole different ballgame from being a mentally deranged person that that walks into obviously shooting somebody because they break into your house is a lot different than walking into an elementary school and blowing away 20 kids and 6 adults. So I don't really see the parallel there.
Okay. Yeah. You had mentioned self-defense. A hot topic a couple of months ago was the Trayvon Martin case. What is your opinion about that and how that played out?
I just think that opens up a whole different can of worms. I don't think that the right to bear arms is really...
Or would you like to give the audience an overview of basically what happened in the case?
Yes, the Trayvon Martin case was a 17-year-old kid by the name of Trayvon Martin who last year was walking home. Well, not walking home, too. He was walking to his dad's fiance's house, and a self-proclaimed neighborhood watchman by the name of George Zimmerman got out of his truck and followed Trayvon Martin, at least for a while. And then what happened between the confrontation, exactly how the confrontation between Mr. Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin came about is unclear, but it ended up with George Zimmerman shooting and killing Trayvon Martin. And he said that he was acting in self-defense, but the details are still pretty murky.
Hmm. One side says that, you know, he was bashed up pretty badly, and he was defending himself. He felt his life was threatened, and you know, some say it's a racial case, some say it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel race played? I mean, that seems to...
I mean, I can't get inside George Zimmerman's head and find out what was motivating him. It's just that it seems like the Stand Your Ground law sets a very dangerous precedent for people to basically use any and every reason under the sun to say either I felt threatened or I felt my life was in danger. You could potentially say that about a lot of different things in order to try and justify shooting somebody. And people seem like the standard ground law, even though it might have an admirable reason behind it, trying to make it easier for people to defend themselves if they do feel in danger, there's always going to be somebody that wants to use that as an excuse to go around playing vigilante.
Okay. Let's talk about the state laws.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the California state laws? Before we go into that, though, let me just brief our audience. In California, all firearm sales transfers, including private transactions and sales at gun shows, must go through a California licensed firearm dealer. For possession, it is unlawful for anyone convicted of a felony or who is a drug addict to own or possess any firearms. Carrying and transportation in vehicles, it is unlawful to carry a loaded rifle, shotgun, handgun in any public place or any public street. And this is from the NRAILA website.
Mm.
Now, background checks is something that is brought up very, very often. What is your opinion on our background checks? Do you think they're sufficient? They need to be tightened significantly? Because those who are for gun control bring up the argument control is to control who has it and who does not. The California Department of Justice Bureau of Firearms Personnel, I have their application in front of me right here, and they say just basically to apply, you need $20, a thumbprint, a photocopy of your driver's license, and just it being notarized. To receive a handgun safety certificate, a person must pass a written test that includes but is not limited to the laws applicable to the ownership, use, and handling of a gun. Now, do you think... Some say California has the strictest background checks, strictest laws of gun control.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say?
If what you just described, all the system of California's gun laws, if that is all correct, then it sounds very good to me. I mean, a lot of people who have been arguing that criminals won't follow the law, they need to remember that in the case of these mass shooters, from Sandy Hook to Aurora, Colorado to Virginia Tech to the DC Navy Yard, all of those guns were purchased legally. They were not purchased off of the black market. And those guys did. It is true that some of those guys did have a very long history of being very severely mentally disturbed. So somebody missed something. But those guns were not purchased off the black market. Those guns were purchased legally, which seems to fly in the face of the argument that it's just criminals won't follow the law. And that's the reason why there's gun crime, because a lot of these other countries, there's very little gun crime. So.
Okay, and I know you wanted to share a clip with us.
Yes.
Ooh, can you tell us what the clip is about before our listeners?
This is just the CEO of the NRA, as I described earlier, Alain LaPierre, and this is in a very abbreviated version of his response to the Sandy Hook shooting.
Okay.
When all of these claims are factually untrue, they don't know what they're talking about. Worse, they perpetuate the dangerous notion that one more gun ban or one more law imposed on peaceable, lawful people will protect us, where 20,000 other laws have failed. As brave and heroic and as self-sacrificing as those teachers were in those classrooms, and as prompt and professional and well-trained as those police were when they responded, they were unable, through no fault of their own, unable to stop it. As parents, we do everything we can to keep our children safe. It's now time for us to assume responsibility for our schools. The only way to stop a monster from killing our kids is to be personally involved and invested in a plan of absolute protection. The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Would you rather have your 911 call bring a good guy with a gun from a mile away or from a minute away?
Okay, Chris, so would you like to talk about that clip? He said the only way to kill a bad guy with a gun is to bring a good guy with a gun.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that what he says doesn't wash. At least in my book, it doesn't wash at all, because As I said before, let me talk a little bit more about my my trip 2.5 months in the UK and in Ireland as well. The UK and Ireland are two of the last remaining countries in the world where, in general, even the police are not routinely armed. For the most part, you don't see police with guns at all.
Okay.
And with that, I mean, if you want to follow Mr. LaPierre's reasoning, because they don't have guns, they should be sitting ducks. They should be getting shot left and right, because after all, in his mind, criminals won't follow the law and they'll always have guns. But according to the Home Office, which is the British government, between the year 2000 and the year 2011, there have been three police officers in England and in Wales that have been shot dead, three in the past decade. So, I mean, if they don't, but there's still this policy in the UK and Ireland of the police generally don't carry guns, so it's not been a bloodbath over there. So obviously, even though they don't have guns, there's still the rate of gun violence in those countries are very low. So also on.
And what about Canada?
You mentioned Canada. Yes, before. Canada. Thank you for reminding me. Canada is often quoted by very many gun rights advocates because Canada has a very high rate of gun ownership compared to most industrialized nations. Not as high as the USA, but still very high. It is a country of hunters. But this does not tell the whole story. In Canada, like most other industrialized countries, you have to have a license to legally purchase a gun. There's a mandatory 2-month waiting period for all purchases. And every person with a gun license has to go through a mandatory. There's universal background checks, which we have talked about a lot. in the USA. They actually do exist in Canada, and everybody with a gun license has to go through a mandatory safety training course. So the vetting process for people who want to have a gun license and buy guns is very thorough and very strict in Canada compared to the USA. So there's a lot of gun owners out there, but they do have to go through very strict process to own their guns.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me change it up a bit. Obama recently presented a comprehensive plan in January.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you heard of in 2013 that includes improving background check system, banning assault weapons and large capacity magazines of ammunition, creating and enforcing stricter trafficking laws, and increases and study and knowledge of gun violence. What do you have to say about this comprehensive plan?
It's definitely a step in the right direction.
Do you think it will be passed?
I mean, I don't understand which specific laws does he want passed into, like, the improved background checks, or...
Or let me say it a different way. What do you think the Republicans will accept as a valid gun control bill? Because right now, you know, our government shut down.
Right.
So the two sides aren't buddies.
I mean, if it happened today, I would say the Republicans wouldn't accept anything. They would try to block the whole thing.
Are you sure? You think so?
Yes, because a lot of Republicans in our Congress right now represent these very red districts. The Republican Party seems to have been hijacked very much by this far right wing, this extremist wing of the Tea Party, seems to be one that's driving the truck. And it doesn't even seem to be, even though John Boehner's the Speaker of the House, he doesn't seem to be one to be driving the train. It seems to be guys like Ted Cruz. And it seems like that if they try to be moderate or reasonable or support anything related to gun control or any other thing that's traditionally associated with the Democratic Party, even if a Republican lawmaker actually agrees with that kind of stuff, they're afraid that either the NRA will start throwing money at an opponent to get them out of office, or the Tea Party will get some far-right candidate to try and defeat them in the primary. So, I mean, even if they agree with these common-sense gun safety measures, then they'll be afraid of being literally primaried out of office.
So you're basically saying nothing can happen. Just, you know, in 2011, 33,000 Americans were victims of gun-related deaths.
Right.
71 of these shootings involved someone killing his or her own family members.
Mm.
So you're basically saying moving forward, nothing can happen until all the Republicans are voted out.
I wouldn't say all the Republicans are voted out. I definitely think that most Republicans are very moderate, reasonable people, but it's just like,
I think so too.
I am not against the Republican Party at all. In fact, even though, for the record, I'm a registered Democrat, but I would like to see a strong Republican Party going forward in this country. We need two parties, not just one.
Definitely.
But the Republican Party really needs to take the moderate, reasonable Republicans definitely need to take their own party back from this extremist Tea Party wing that's just like,
This is when I speak as a neutral vessel.
Right.
I try to bring up sides in which that have been, you know, shunned. I think the Tea Party, whatever they are, I think they have brought up certain issues. They have brought up our debt problem, our moral problem. And I think they must get credit somewhere for this. I do think in some ways they're extreme, as the Occupy Wall Streeters were extreme.
Right.
I feel a lot of the Occupy Wall Streeters sometimes didn't know what their cause was.
Right.
They knew something was wrong, but they didn't know quite what.
Right.
They were just out and fighting. And I like that. I mean, that's what our system's about. When you have a problem with something, you voice your opinion.
Yeah.
And I feel that the Tea Party people voiced their opinion specifically on the debt. Now, bringing up a problem is very different than bringing up a problem and having a solution,
yeah,
or at least working on a solution with the other side. You have our government shut down. You have two sides right now. We are America. We're supposed to be working with the people, trying to avoid catastrophes from happening. Just here locally in Santa Monica, there was a shooting.
Yeah.
One of my personal friends was run over.
Mm.
You know, it's it's shocking how it's a political issue when humanity is at stake. Mm-hmm. Where do you think Democrats can reach out to Republicans? Because it seems that, contrary to what I think, what people think, what the average person thinks of the Tea Party, what you think of the Tea Party, mm-hmm. they do bring a certain element. Yeah. What do you think, or how do you think this can work out? Because it seems that, from what you're saying, there is no solution. It's just going to be the way it is until we get these people out.
Well, it just seems like there seems to be a big difference to me between negotiating. My definition of negotiating is not telling the other side, either give me what I want or else. That's not a negotiation.
But sometimes I think you need to stick by principle. You can compromise on issues, but some say they don't want to compromise on their civil liberties, mm-hmm. in which this country was founded on.
Right.
So what do you say? How can a deal be made? It seems like you're saying the only way that it can be made is if Democrats are in charge and they get their way.
No, I'm not saying... I mean...
Better phrased, where do you think the Democrats have gone wrong that they could go right and reach out to Republicans?
In terms of gun control, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't think that... I think we definitely had an opportunity. I don't think it's so much a Democrat or versus Republican thing right now as it's a Republican versus Republican thing right now.
Okay, so there's a divide, you think, in the Republican Party.
Yeah, I mean, there have...
Boehner,
I mean,
and the Tea Party.
The big reason why I think that it's extremely difficult, if not impossible, for the Democrats to reach across the aisle for the Republicans. First, the Republicans have to get their house in order.
Okay.
I mean, the Democrats can't reach out to the Republican Party if the Republican Party is in total disarray.
So you're basically saying the Republican Party is going under construction.
Right.
And it is not until they're complete with their reconstruction in which we can move forward.
They got to get their own house in order, right?
Okay. Well, the topic of gun control has been in our society for a long time now. Mm-hmm. And the conversation will always continue. But hopefully those at home, of you listening, this has definitely been like an insightful, you know, first episode. And although the proposed laws pertaining to it may not be signed today, or like you say, may never be signed until a certain party gets their act together, that's what you say. This conversation has been a starting point. To the viewers listening, to the listeners listening, if from this discussion you have an opinion or idea you would like our state to know about guns, gun control, contact your local congressman. You can visit www.house.gov/representatives/find or visit our website and we'll have it on there. You can just message your local congressman. You know, they say a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. And so, although we may not sign any regulations into law today, we are mere individuals distinctively, but collectively our ambitions towards a common cause can change the world. It actually just all starts with a genuine discussion, a discussion in which we get to know each other. So I thank you for joining us today. If you like to be a part of our show or have recommendations for future shows, visit our website at www.politicalvendetta.org. Or for more information, email us at politicalvendetta@live.com. Our shows air Wednesdays from 2:45 to 3:45. But you can also see our podcast online, too. Stay tuned for our next show. My name is Vijay Vaswani. With poise, integrity, and an open mind, see you next time on Political Vendetta.